Hello, hello, hello. This is Haley Lynn Gray with Leadership Girl, and I am so happy to have you here with me tonight. Tonight, I have an amazing treat for you and a phenomenal friend of mine. Her name is Nicole Jaramillo, and she is a special guest of mine, and she is a veteran from the U.S. Army and is a transition specialist. And we talk about, you know, what it means to go from the military to civilian life and some of the challenges involved there. And I am so glad to have her with me here tonight. Welcome, Nicole.
Hey, Haley. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So glad to have you here. So tell me a little bit about what you do with Transitions Boot Camp.
So with Transitions Boot Camp, I work with transitioning personnel, veterans, and civilians to help them create clarity and confidence in the way that they're communicating their growth goals. I help them understand how their experience and their backgrounds can take them to the career of their dreams. So it's not just about a transition or looking for that next job. It's about helping them find their personal fit and what it is they enjoy.
So what are the biggest challenges you see for military members who are transitioning to civilian life in terms of job or fit?
Well, you know, having just recently gone through it myself, we have programs in the military that's called a Transition Assistance Program, TAP. And it doesn't matter which organization or branch of service that you're coming from, whether it's Army or Navy, Air Force or Marines, Coast Guard, they all have a form of a TAP program. And in these programs, they're very group-centric. It's very classroom-oriented. And so we get a whole lot of information thrown at us in a very short period of time and told, okay, go out and make it happen. You know, you're supposed to take this next 90 days, 6 months, year to focus on yourself and to get ready to join the civilian world. And the problem that a lot of veterans face is that time frame that they're supposed to be focusing on themselves and getting transitioned into something that they're not used to necessarily is spent working a job that, you know, they're working the position that they've been working all along. And so when you have this immense pressure on you to find something equivalent to what you're working at right now, because you're not walking away from your responsibilities with your family, and you're not walking away from the life that you've been leading, so you've got to find something that's equivalent, and you've got to figure out how to make your military experience and background communicate in a way that is commensurate with the positions that you're looking to go into as a civilian. And when I say that, I'm particularly talking about, you know, I was an information operations officer. And when I say that, a lot of people think that I was in the IT arena. And I have no IT background. But I do, from what I've done in the Army, know how to create communication strategies to help you communicate not just about yourself, but about the goals and the experiences that you want to have and how to create a plan around those goals so that you're in action to achieve your end state.
Right. So, you know, really it is that, you know, translation piece between the military and civilian life that I think is sometimes really murky because it's not clear from titles or experience what you actually did before and then how it might translate or be relevant in any way, shape, form, or fashion to any other job.
Right. Well, and, you know, the depressing thing for a lot of people is that we get told, you know, expect to make 20 to 30,000 less than you're making in the Army right now or
wow,
in the service right now. And it's because what they see is leadership, communication, previously trained, and a person that's dedicated to the work that they're doing. And we do ourselves a disservice when we do our resumes because those are the skills that we tend to translate, and we forget to look at how our skills relate to the positions that we're trying to obtain. And so trying to create this image of yourself and communicate those essences of your experience in a way that is the same as the language that the hiring manager is looking for. And I guess the best example I have is I went on an interview for a business development manager. And my resume is written as a communication strategy manager, you know, a communications manager, a strategy professional. And so when I went into this interview, the hiring manager was very combative about whether I had the experience or not. And as I sat and answered her questions, I was able to lay out my experience in terms of business-to-business relationships, business-to-corporate relationships, how I had to identify objectives and goals, and then seek out the key players to help build those relationships and achieve the goals that we were trying to achieve. Because I had Right. to turn my resume into the job description and translate that for her. And once I did that, she understood better about what my experience was bringing to the table. And so understanding how to communicate your experience helps you fight for a higher salary and not settle at $30,000 less than what you're currently making. Because there's no reason to come from the military into a civilian position and take that pay cut. You know, we have
But that's the reality for a lot of people in the military that are leaving the military is that they do take a massive pay cut.
Yes, they do. They do. And I would argue that it's because we're not helping our programs that we offer to our service members right now are not set up to help them understand how to translate their skills. They get told you've got to translate your skills, but there's no method for doing it out there. And if I give my resume to a resume writer to do it, they say they do military resumes, but they still use the same language. So they put the operations sergeant, they put NCO in charge, put officer in charge, because they don't translate it to civilian language for you. So instead of saying that I was a G7 or an S7, which is a staff position that I held, I have to call myself a communications director. I have to call myself a communications manager because I have to reflect the language that is relevant to the position that I'm hiring for.
Right.
And that's exactly what I work with people to do.
Right. So what exactly kinds of services do you provide when you're working with military members in transition?
So there is a 6-week coaching program that I offer, and it is set up to help them look at, I start with LinkedIn and talk to them about LinkedIn and what it is that they need to do to get themselves visible in the online environment for job searches and that kind of stuff, because it is important in the respect that it links with every application and job bank out there, your LinkedIn does. And so you want that to reflect who you truly are. The second thing that the second week is done with networking, and we talk about how to network so that you can leverage your connections to help you get into job opportunities. The third week is about your resume and how your resume is set up and using accomplishment statements versus task statements, because you've got to communicate in a way that tells people what you did, who you did it for, and to what effect. Because if your statement doesn't give them the so what, they're not really going to understand your skill set. The fifth week is about interview and appearance and going into that process. And then the sixth week is all about staying in action. How do you create that plan, and how do you set your goals so that you can stay in action? I do resume writing, and I do LinkedIn profiles.
So it's interesting that you talk about appearance and interview. I would think that coming out of the military, you know, given the stereotypes, that most people in the military would understand what proper appearance and dress is for an interview. Is that not the case?
Well, it's not. Okay, so it's not that they don't understand what proper appearance and dress is for an interview, but if you think about it, we've spent 10 years, 15 years, 34 years in the service wearing a uniform. We wear our daily work uniform, what we call our ACUs, our Army Combat Uniform, or they've changed them to a new type now. And then we have our dress uniform. And you wear your dress uniform, your Class A uniform when you go to, you know, payday activities or if you've got ceremonies. So it's not that we don't know how to dress. It's not that we don't know how to wear our hair or keep our haircut or tailor our nails. It's more about understanding how to bring together a professional image that isn't stagnated back in the 80s when we all joined the Army or joined the military. It's about understanding what the cuts and wear of a current suit is for a man. You know, is it wearing a vest or is it wearing a tie? Do you wear suspenders? Do you match your socks to your pant cuff or do you match them to your shoes? What is that, those little nuances of appearance that need to be talked about? For ladies, it's understanding that you don't over-accessorize. That, yes, just like we did in the military where we wear muted color on our nails or we play down our makeup, we do the same thing when you go into a job interview because you don't want to be overstated.
Right. That makes sense. And you mentioned interview skills. Like, what types of interview skills do you find yourself teaching?
So a lot of the interview skills that I teach is about how to answer questions and how to present your materials in a positive way. If I'm working, you know, sometimes I work with people who are leaving the military, not because they want to leave the military, but because they have to leave the military. We're downsizing. You know, all of the services are cutting their personnel by 40,000 in the next couple of years or whatever those numbers happen to be. And so as they leave, as they exit, their exit may be on a shorter note than what they wanted it to be. So there's a little bit of negativity there. Or maybe the last job that they held, they didn't have a very good leader or they had some bad activities go on throughout their career where they found themselves struggling with certain things. And while they came out on top, you don't want to talk about those items in an interview in a negative way. You don't want to have a negative attitude about the previous job that you had or about a particular experience. So you've got to turn that around and make it sound positive. And it's about how much detail do you put into an answer and what skills do you want to look at? So much like the recruiters, we have some military recruiters that work with our transitioning officers and senior NCOs or senior enlisted personnel. And they recommend using a format called STAR when you answer your questions. It's situation, tasks, audience, and results. And as you sit down and look at your experience and explain out your experience on certain areas, you want to make sure that you capture projects, key accomplishments, and experiences across the subject matter expert or subject matter area that you're going into in a way that comes across in those. Then you're able to answer very different questions. You can use the same scenario but answer the question very differently. So if they ask, you know, what's a time that you had to deal with a struggle on your work, you can come back and give them a scenario. What's a time that you had to negotiate a position so that you could get the outcome that you needed? So now you have another scenario, and you just walk those through that STAR format. But you can have three or four concepts on hand and then adapt them to whatever question you get asked.
That makes sense. So give me an example of some of the translation issues you have seen on people's resumes, because I know you've seen more than a few resumes lately.
Yes. So some translation issues are the – so working with a member who has a food service career, but he's also done some physical security – personal security, like as a personal security detachment enlisted. And so trying to capture that language in a way that comes across to civilian speak – you know, as a dining facility manager, he is responsible for training the personnel that come into the facility, for ordering food, for setting menus, for creating schedules, for making sure that the personnel assigned to the dining facility are going through their professional training and progressions the way that they're supposed to. So he's doing career counseling. He's encouraging them to get their civilian education. And so there's a lot of tasks that take place within a dining facility that you wouldn't necessarily think about as a facilities manager. And so when you apply, when he tries to apply to positions, everything translates to being a restaurant manager or translates to being a short order cook or a sous chef. And that's not where his experience is. It's much higher than that. You know, he can come in and he can do event training or event planning. He could come in and create scenarios where you have to have 3,000 people at an event, and he can staff it, he can secure it, and he can make sure that your audio systems are going. And so it's making sure that he captures all of that in his accomplishment statements that he's put on his resume. And it's teaching how to tailor your resume to the position that you're applying to. Because if he's applying for a personal security position so that he's working on a security detail somewhere, he doesn't need to worry about all of the food service items and accomplishments. He really wants to focus on those leadership accomplishments and those times when he's had to put physical events together so that he's had to ensure that the security is there and he's had to ensure that all of the parts are moving through it. And so working with them to do those kind of things is what I find most often.
Fantastic. Right. So it sounds like there's a lot of challenges that face military members as they start to transition back to civilian life.
There is. It's, you know, learning that, you know, we have a hierarchical system in the military. And so if I say jump, the person below me is saying, yes, Roger, got it. Or they're asking, well, where do I need to jump to? But they're not telling me they're not going to jump, because I've given an order. NCO says, you have to be at this location at this time, and the person shows up 10, 15 minutes early. When you move into a civilian position, that hierarchical structure isn't always there. You know, I interviewed recently with, I'm 42, and I'm interviewing with 22 and 24-year-olds are interviewing me. You know, so it's understanding that you're moving into an environment much less fluid, and, or much more fluid. It's more dynamic, more personalized. So it's okay for Sue to know John and for them to go get a drink after work, or for three or four families to get together and hang out, you know, because we tend not to mix those socializations across the Army. And so it's figuring out how to take the structure out of what we're used to. It's removing hierarchy and realizing that organizations are a lot more flat. It's realizing that while I have a standard for being to every meeting in every location 10 minutes early, it's okay if the meeting starts 5 minutes late because they flex that way. Because we're not typically used to that kind of situation. It's understanding that when you walk away from the military, some of the aggressiveness, assertiveness, initiative that you take to accomplish tasks or to accomplish a mission isn't necessarily going to be perceived in a positive light inside your new organization on the civilian side. Because now it's seen as, well, you're coming in here trying to take my job, and what you're actually supposed to be doing is this, so stay out of my lane. And understanding how to navigate those social complexities that, while they exist in the Army, are easily dealt with because of our hierarchy, not so much on the civilian side.
Right, yeah. Certainly you do have a lot more political kind of machinations in general with people trying to assert dominance over others and over other organizations and to jockey for position.
Right. See, and in the Army, we're assigned our positions. You're going to go do this job. This is your title. I get the respect from those around me for title and for rank. And so not knowing how to cope with that when you come out of some of our higher ranking folks, you know, if you're a 06, a full bird colonel or a lieutenant colonel who's been sitting in those positions for a while with some very high authority and commanding a battalion of people, which is about 3,200 people, and they all jump to when you walk into a room, you don't get that anymore. Your rank doesn't mean anything in the new job. You know, whether you're a retired military person or not, some people thank you for your service, but that's about as far as it's going to go because now it doesn't have anything to do with your new job. So it tends to shock some people. You know, it's culture shock. So it's kind of like moving. Yeah, it's kind of like moving from being in a country bumpkin somewhere and living in the country on a farm. Now all of a sudden you're thrown into the middle of New York City because you decided to go to fashion school. You know, imagine that culture shock. Or go from the U.S. to living in Korea. It's the same kind of concept.
Right. I imagine that it's a tremendous shock to a lot of military members once they start having to make that transition back and in so many different ways, from salaries to benefit to the way that we communicate, and the list just goes on and on and on.
Right. Well, you know, and it's not just the military member that has that shock. You know, families, spouses and children have gotten used to living a certain way. They've gotten used to having certain privileges and certain rights that come along with being married to somebody in the military or being parented by somebody in the military. And now as you retire or separate and leave out of that structure, some of those things go away. You may not have the same sense of community where you move. You may not have the same sense of camaraderie, you know. I have a job and I go off on a business trip with this civilian corporation. My husband's not getting called by the corporation's manager to say, hey, or CEO to say, hey, does your family have everything you need? Whereas if I deployed, the family readiness group is right there checking on your spouse, checking on your children, making sure that they have what they need. The schools are bringing in programs to help them adjust and cope with the separation of parents and departure from home. And the kids don't get that on the civilian side. The spouses don't get that. So it's a little bit different.
I'd say more than just a little bit different. Thank you so much for joining me tonight, Nicole. How could somebody get in touch with you and, you know, find out more about what you do?
They can go to transitionsbootcamp.com and find out some information there about us. And they can also find us on Facebook or LinkedIn. So on LinkedIn, they can do linkedin.com/in/NicoleJ and connect with me there. Or they can find our group page under Transitions Bootcamp and join us there for some of the conversations that we have about transitioning.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. Once again, that's transitionsbootcamp.com. And they can also find you as Nicole J on LinkedIn. So thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm so excited you joined us tonight on my show, Haley Gray with Leadership Girl. I know that your information is just incredibly valuable, and I do want to tell you how much I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Haley. You have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too.